This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Welcome, welcome back. It is a Wednesday evening here on Power Perspective, which we call our own Thursday because tomorrow is our last show for the week. So tomorrow is officially our sort of mini Friday. So this is like, you know, our mini Thursday. Earlier on, I posed a question on Twitter, and the question was, the SABC has proposed a household levy to replace the TV license system. Do you support such a move? How high is your license compliance status? So the question is, are you currently sort of honoring the system as it is? Seen some very interesting responses. Some people are confessing, hey, yasini nzobosh. One answer says, the SABC wants our money to compensate for its inability to compete. They have some of the best platforms and infrastructure to beat most independent broadcasters. Money's not the problem. Poor leadership is. That is the view of Usnazo. Kubo Nimkize says, well, the money that may be required for us to fund this levy, as long as Cyril will give it to us, employed or not, then we're good to go. That is the view of Ukuboni Beyonce. Not that other Beyonce, the Grammy one. No, our local Beyonce. She says, I mean, first of all, have they addressed the looting over them and their substandard programming? They must fix that first and then we can talk. So she has the view that there are issues relating to the financial management at the SABC. And then, of course, the quality of the programming. And then once those things are sorted, then we can re-engage Beyonce and try to persuade her to pay this. But of course, the question of how we ended up here is equally important. Over the next hour, I'm going to be speaking to three guests who've been following this because their jobs demand that they do it, but also because they have a passion and an interest into the fate of the public broadcaster. Our first guest is Thabile Zuma, who is from Outer. She's a project manager. Good evening, Thabile.
Good evening. How are you?
All good. We also have from the Democratic Alliance, Zakhele Mbele, who is the spokesperson on communications. Zakhele, good evening.
Good evening, Kaya, and to the listeners.
And we also have, from Media Monitoring Africa, William Bird himself. Good evening, William.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thank you. And obviously, the question that must be on everyone's head is, where is the SABC? Well, apparently, according to the SABC, they are not speaking about this matter. Yes, I can see the irony. It's a communications issue, and the SABC has decided not to communicate about it. So guess what we did? We then went to the Department of Communications itself, and then we said, well, this matter is clearly going to be your headache, whichever way it turns. Can we talk about it? And no, the Ministry of Communications has decided not to communicate about the single most important communications question that we have faced as a country in a generation. So here we are with three individuals who actually believe in communication. I'll start with you, William. I mean, Media Monitoring Africa has been following the fate and the issues relating to the SABC for a very long time. And last week, I wrote an article, and the article was actually motivated by what we saw in the UK, where suddenly there was a TV interview involving Oprah, and people said, oh, TVs are still a thing, which was quite interesting to see. But the point that I raised there, William, is that in spite of how, you know, the technology world and the world of film has evolved, public broadcasters still play a remarkably important role. Public broadcasters in a country like South Africa, with its polarized economic variables, play a remarkably important role. Talk us through the role of a public broadcaster, never mind the question of financing.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, you're completely correct. Public broadcasters are essential for democracies, basically. And if you look at countries where they have established public broadcasters, where they are genuine public broadcasters, you'll find that there they demonstrate higher levels of trust in their media. And one of the most trusted entities tends to be the public broadcaster. Now, what we've seen over the COVID pandemic has been the critical importance of media. Now, if you look at that scenario and you say, if you want to have a democracy and you have diverse views, voices, stations, media, etc., one of those things needs to be a public broadcaster because it fulfills a role and mandate that no other broadcaster does or can or should, in fact, right? And if we go from the point of departure where we say we want a democracy, part of having a democracy means having a public broadcaster that's able to produce, you know, quality news and programming and reflect a diverse range of opinions and speak to audiences that others don't, so that you're able to get a diversity of views. So if we accept that that's something that we want to aspire to, even though we would say that we aren't necessarily there now, because I think we have to accept that people are deeply and appropriately cynical of any kind of institution in the public eye at the moment, and any public institution precisely because they've been deliberately undermined and denuded of talent and abilities largely, and run in a state of crisis. So if we move from that point and we see that a public broadcast is essential for a democratic state, then you say the problem then becomes, how do you sustain that, knowing that it has to be something that ideally should come from public funds?
Thabile, somebody listening to William may say, aye, William is speaking about the 1980s and the 1970s. There's so much diversity of access to news. I can go on Facebook for free and get access to every single story that the SABC is covering in one form or another. Is William, and perhaps even the SABC, holding on to a model that has probably been superseded by the passing tides of time?
Thank you for the question. Just to respond to that, I think precisely what's actually happening in the SABC, that they've fallen off the content that actually attracts young people and attracts people into their space. So I think the SABC business model itself is not working to an efficient that they can provide what they actually require to provide based on their mandate. So we as Alta, we believe that the SABC should actually look and review its content so that they have more, which will attract more advertising income for them. So based on that, they'll be able to provide information that will speak to their mandate and actually in that state attract more people that will be consumers of their content that they're actually going to be providing. So in that being said, with introducing levies and more taxes on people to actually sustain the SABC, then it's a question of asking, is their business model actually working or is it effective to be able to actually achieve their mandate? When you look into that, we need to understand their operational costs and see if the SABC model actually does work. And when you look at charging people levies to actually sustain the broadcaster and to be able to actually provide its the content that is required to provide based on the mandate, then it's very important to ask yourself then, why are people being strained with these levies instead of the broadcaster actually reviewing if their broadcasting business model is actually working? So in response to the question, I may say that there's a lot of factors that have contributed to the broadcaster not being able to actually fulfill its mandate and it's required as required by the Act.
Thanks for that, Thabile. Zakhele, you know, one of the points that William raises is the fact that, you know, a public broadcaster is important for democracy. And I suppose if one has to be explicit about it, when we say that a public broadcaster is important for democracy, it means that it's important to you as Zakhele Mbele, who wants to be able to communicate to me as Kaya in Matatiele or in Vereeniging that, hey, there's a general election coming up. There's a local government election coming up. Here's what I, as a representative of the DA, will do for you if you vote for me. Talk us through the importance of a public broadcaster in actually facilitating that democratic process, which enables you to say, well, whatever the message that we had in mind, at least people have heard it, so they are voting on the basis of knowledge rather than hoping.
No, sure. Look, I think one of the key points is that the public broadcaster would operate, even though there would be a broadcast media entity, they operate without having to be concerned about profit motive or about, sort of pleasing narrow commercial interests. And that's the key value add and the unique role of the public broadcaster, is that they can provide those media and information services, but without, other agenda hanging over them from a more profit-centric or commercial perspective. So in terms of footprints and reach and inclusivity and having a broader appetite for addressing issues and producing content that a more purely profit-driven commercial enterprise might not, that's really what's important.
And, you know, Zakhele, when we talk about that reach, it is quite important, probably not for the type of community that's listening to this particular conversation right now, because let's face it, we are based in an urban area, for example. It's probably more important in places where perhaps a community radio station is literally the primary source of information about the things that matter to that community. And of course, when we then look around and say, yo, private enterprise must thrive, private enterprise is not going to go and set up a community radio station when maybe the type of income that they want is not going to be generated. So it's probably even more key in instances or in communities where perhaps the economic resources or the economic profile wouldn't be the type of thing that private enterprise chases and says, hey, we're going to go and open up a radio station there.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, I think one of the best and easiest examples as a parallel is if you look at housing, you know, ideally one would want every company and every family and every household to have the means to provide their own accommodation, whether it's rental or buying and owning. But where there are people who need that good or that service but don't have the means, then the state must step in and subsidize or deliver directly in order to achieve the social equity we need for a stable democracy.
William, I want to come back to you. I mean, obviously, the question of dealing with the SABC in particular is an interesting one, in that for a very long time, it was indeed a monopoly like most of the other state-owned enterprises, which means that it had the unique ability to simply say, actually, William, you're going to have TV for 3 minutes and that's it. You don't have a choice. Actually, William, you can only listen to this radio station at this particular hour. You don't have a choice. So that type of traditional structure, that monopolistic thinking, is it one of the reasons that some people say the SABC is just no longer fit for purpose? There are far more agile players out there, far more creative players out there, while it still says, yo, this is how we do things. Is this an SABC that has simply fallen behind the curve?
Sure. I guess to some degree the answer is yes, you know, in that if you look at, but that's a bit like our country as well. You know, we've had this opportunity of moving to digital for the last 20 years, 25 years, and instead of taking that and moving ahead as other countries on the continent have done, we've dallied, there've been fights and all sorts of, and lots of other competitive issues, etc. But we haven't advanced that. Because if we had cheaper access to the internet, if we had wider access to the internet, then I think that SABC, excuse me, would have been forced to change a lot faster than it has. Also, because it's been this political football where it's been used as a thing to drive, you know, the communications agenda of a party that seems to be stuck in the 1970s in terms of how they think and understand of public broadcasting. And now I'm talking about the ANC. It means that they haven't had to try and shift and become an agile broadcaster, unlike your broadcasters like Power FM that started in very difficult economic climates, you know, running on a system and is now facing this digital world. And all of our media now are facing fundamental challenges around sustainability and around income generation. And that's the broader kind of context. So within that, the SABC hasn't transformed, you know, and that's what they're trying to do now. So it's only been since this last board has been appointed that they've talked about SABC not just as a broadcaster, but as providing public service content. So, you know, your point is completely spot on. That this idea that they, this monopoly that has the, you know, the be-all and end-all voice on things, that's no longer the case. But what we've seen around the world is that in a time of crisis, outside of a crisis, when you're approaching elections, and people need accurate, reliable, quality information, they will turn to their public broadcaster, they will turn to their trusted and credible media in order to get access to information they know they can trust. So sure, they can go on the internet and find information about anything and everything, but that's precisely the problem, is you can find information about anything and everything. If you want to find a site that'll tell you South Africa's run by a bunch of alien bananas, you will find that kind of content, right? But the reality is you want to find something that's actually useful, that'll help you decide what to do, understand how to run your business, you know, all of those sorts of things. And critically, you've got to meet the needs of our people and the marginalized and the poor. And the best vehicle for that is your public broadcaster or your public service content provider, as we'll probably refer to it in the future.
Power listeners, we are talking about the SABC. You can call us on 0861 987 000 to share your insights, particularly in relation to how they are now proposing that they want to be funded. They are talking about a household levy. We're going to get to the mechanics of that with my three guests, which is Thabile Zuma from Outer, Zakhele Mbele from the Democratic Alliance, and also William Bird, who's a director of Media Monitoring Africa. Now, Thabile, you know, when we speak about the importance of a public broadcaster in a country like ours, it does indeed become a primary source of information for a lot of us. But again, I think some people will argue that, you know, just like we used to think SAA was the only thing that could get us flying in and out, other people have come in, they've done the job much better. And the example from across the globe is that people have moved on, people have adapted. Is South Africa suffering from an inability to adapt and say, well, actually, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the SABC was the primary medium of communication. There are so many other options now. We should be looking at a different conversation altogether. What would you say?
I think it actually is a good question, especially when you look in today's world, you find that we have people who can actually afford to have different broadcasting services that they can access. But then there's also a huge reliability on SABC, also as a general broadcaster, for those individuals that cannot actually be able to also access, broadcasting content. This means that we do need the SABC as a national broadcaster, because those people rely also from the SABC to learn. In terms of education, our young kids rely on that information to learn. But people in the townships, entrepreneurs, rely on that content. So there is a huge market that actually does require the SABC to actually function and at its best and provide content that is that's reliable to those people who cannot afford to pay for the broadcasting services. Yes, also, we do acknowledge that there's a working class and people who actually can afford to purchase certain content. But what is important here is for the SABC to actually recognize that they play a very important role in actually uplifting communities, especially that are disadvantaged communities. And they have also an ability to actually improve the education of young people. So what we're saying is they need to ensure that whatever content they're actually providing is relevant, also that those people can be empowered. And I think that's what is actually very important right now.
Zakhele, you know, all of these ideas and these, you know, convictions about the SABC would obviously be moot if the SABC was not a trusted medium. So we could go on about how it still has the most pervasive reach across the country compared to any other broadcaster. But if no one is listening in because they just do not believe that, you know, it is independent enough or it's credible enough, it would indeed be a waste of resources. Recent history does indeed indicate to us that in how the SABC has been run over multiple administrations and over multiple boards and leadership, the credibility issue has emerged. Would you say, in your capacity as someone who clearly observes and follows the SABC religiously, is the SABC on the path towards restoring the sense of credibility that is actually necessary in order for everything that we've said in this conversation to actually have a meaning?
That's actually a very good question, Kaya, and it's actually a question that I posed to the management of the SABC when they appeared before the Communications Portfolio Committee 2 weeks ago. Look, what I'll say is that There are promising signs of progress and change. It's still very early days. As things stand, speaking for myself, I have confidence in the current board. They seem to be operating in a much more effective, deliberative and rational way from previous boards we've seen. And management does seem to be making every effort to take the right steps to get things back on the right track. But that track is a very long one. There's a very long road to go, and there are some tough decisions that need to be made. So I think in terms of sort of public trust in the SABC, I think we always need to remember, and it's a point that I like to forefront when I can, we need to remember that the SABC is two arms, right? There's the television arm and the radio arm. And I think the radio arm in particular, once you drill down to certain radio stations, whether it's about their sort of thematic focus on content or about their geographical footprints, they command much more attention and loyalty and trust than perhaps aspects of the television arm have been doing of late in terms of the quality of the content. So I think for me, one big question going forward for the SABC's reform, restructuring, rationalization is whether there doesn't need to be a sort of back to their roots or sort of back to basics mentality. If we look back at how the SABC started in 1923, it started basically as a radio broadcast service. And I think that'll always be the SABC's comparative advantage and strength, looking at the national picture and looking at how we can build inclusivity around language and culture and various issues. So perhaps the television arm of the SABC will need to have a lot of downsizing, slimlining, shedding a lot of its excess weights. But the radio arm, I think, is where we need to improve and build up strength.
That's a very interesting point, Zakhele, because I would probably push back and say maybe that's half the problem. The SABC is about more than just radio and TV. It should seek to diversify, but that is obviously something that the board must deliberate on. William, you've probably seen it all. You've seen the board of Ben Ngubane, you've seen the board of Dina Bule, you've seen the board of Ellen Shabalala, you've seen them all. Talk me through what makes this board in... Oh, sorry, I forgot about Faith Mutambi and Professor Magube. You can never forget about them. This board... very stable. They've been together, I think, since towards the end of 2020. I stand to be corrected, either 2019 or 2020, because I know their term ends in 2024. They seem to be a bit more stable. They seem to be a bit less dramatic, with the exception of one famous board member who also has other issues at the Estate Agency Affairs Board. Story for another day. What is it about this board that now enables you to say, actually, it looks like, finally, for the first time in a while, these people seem to know what they're doing?
Well, I think it's a number of factors. The first is that for the first time, effectively, since we've become a democracy, we have an actual independent board. And that's because there was a very important legal case that determined that the board can't be interfered with by the minister. You know, until 2016, you had the various ministers, and remember, they changed very, very frequently as well, coming in and deciding which person would be on the board. The ANC would determine a list. They'd pick them. They'd put in some awful people, some of them you've just mentioned. And then you'd have the minister and some of those terrible board members choosing executives, often or very seldom, I should say, on the basis of capability and skill set. And what you've seen now is that you've got an independent board who not only take their job seriously, but they assert their independence. So one of the reasons they've been in the news frequently is because they keep saying, no, we're not going to toe the line of whatever we're being told. This is our plan. We'll speak to Parliament. And they keep denying various efforts to interfere with their ability to operate the SABC. So that's one of the first critical things. The second critical thing is that it's then been the board who've gone and they found a team of senior executives who have gone in and you know, performed really well in terms of trying to get fix and stabilize the SABC. So, you know, they've done critical things around editorial inquiries, harassment, inquiries into sexual harassment. They've been pursuing cases from the SIU that were, you know, I think for some of them were 2012, you know, even earlier than that, that they've been pursuing and trying to get them, get back money, claim back money. You know, those are the kinds of cases that they've been going after. And if you look at their overall quality, you know, since they with their under their current head of news, their quality of news from 2016 to now is, I mean, it's fantastically enormous. You know, you can't even begin to put those things on the same kind of scale. It's like Donald Trump's underpants and Nelson Mandela. It's like that kind of extreme that you're talking about, where you went from something that was truly horrendous and really deeply anti-democratic to something where now, sure, they slip up every now and then, as all media houses do. But broadly speaking, the quality of news and that you're getting now from SABC is really excellent, and that's reflected in their numbers. So you'll see that they've got a million, I think it was a million when I was looking on their YouTube channel the other day, over a million subscribers on their YouTube channel. And that's when, and that's since they've only started to take digital seriously in the last couple of years. Now, you imagine if they had started that program 8 to 10 years ago, how far along the line they would be. So, you know, they've made some really significant and important steps on that journey. The trouble is that we expect everything of our public broadcaster. We expect them to be the public broadcaster that broadcasts in all of our 11 official languages. You know, we expect them to adhere to a massive public mandate. And then we say to them, oh, no, and you have to operate as a commercial broadcaster too. And you have to operate according to a fashion and a setup that was set, determined in the 1990s, you know. And
yeah,
things are just fundamentally different to that now. And so you have to have a period where you have to try and redefine what the broadcaster looks like, how it operates, and what it does. What we do know is that it's absolutely critical to a South African democratic space, where you aren't getting people producing content for all of our other African languages. You know, combined, you look at the African language stations. I mean, I think that their weekly audience is at like 20 million listeners, kind of thing. You know, so there's enormous value that they clearly still delivering. So this idea that they no longer that relevant or whatever, you know, that's just nonsense. The reality is they are there, they are enormously relevant, they're essential, as essential as having other diverse media. And that's the other point. You know, it's not a either or that we have only commercial or only private. You know, we need that critical mix, and part of that critical mix is a public broadcaster. The question is how do we sustain that, knowing that things that are public good are things that have to be sustained in different ways.
You know, if the SABC survives for the next 100 years, that particular day in October, on the 17th of October, may actually become the moment it all changed. Because, William, actually, on the day that the Matojane judgment was delivered, which said actually no minister can direct the board on who to appoint as executives, it just happened that that evening there was a reshuffle and the Ministry of Communications was affected because, you know, President Jacob Zuma, as it was back then, moved Mamoloko Kubayengubane into that portfolio. She didn't last because by Valentine's Day 2018, Cyril Ramaphosa then moved Nomvula Mokonyane into that position. Then she appealed, and even after that, that position that you cannot interfere with the board's autonomy has remained steadfast. And I suspect it has played a significant role in ensuring that this board, unlike any others, has the ability to say, no, this is my job, I'll do this, and you stick to whatever your political position is. I only account to parliament, which is a very important point. We're going to take a short break, William, Azakhele and Thabile, and then thereafter, we're going to move ever closer to the question of, now that we do have the SABC, who should pay it?
Power Perspective with Kaya Sitole. Call Kaya on 0861-987-000.
Welcome back to Power Perspective on this Wednesday evening. My name is Kaya Sitole. We are now currently discussing matters relating to the SABC. It is indeed the biggest and most pervasive broadcaster in the country. It has been around since 1923, as Zakhele reminded us earlier on, just a couple of years after Eskom, and actually the year after Wits University was founded, because I'm remembering yesterday's conversation with the UCT colleagues. But the key issue here is that the SABC is here. The SABC is important, as we've all highlighted. and the SABC needs to be funded. The SABC currently relies on a TV licensing model, which has its particular flaws. Perhaps the most explicit and the most glaring flaw is that if you don't pay your TV license, the best they can do is threaten you via SMS. And in the world where people can block using Truecaller, SABC's threats are just not getting them anywhere. And even if they thought that the threats were working, the evidence is that they're not collecting the money. So the question that I posed earlier on Twitter is, are people even complying? So I said, how high is your compliance status? And a lot of people are saying, Aish, what is that? And also the question of, would you pay a household levy? Other people are saying no. So I'll read some of your tweets. Tensai Bangai said, I owe thousands on outstanding fees. I don't own a TV. I watch almost nothing besides putting on something on YouTube or Netflix before bed. The SABC is a joke. The money is better spent giving internet access to everyone, and a huge economic multiplier. Jauhelo says on the question of the levy, it is madness. We are being taxed for existing. Government can fund the SABC without taking more money out of our pockets. That is, of course, tricky because government will then say, well, in order for us to have the money to give to the SABC, you need to pay more taxes, which is a bit of a conundrum. Joe Scott, who has a lot of numbers after his name, he says, after the Saudi circus, I stopped paying. I'm currently harassed every month. I will start to become vulgar. Thank God he hasn't done that yet, so I don't have to be vulgar on radio. Godfrey Albertin has got a good story to tell because he says, according to the SABC, he's up to date. He's a compliant citizen. And he says, let's just leave it at there. So I don't know what that means. Ben Puller says, nope, not to the levy. It's too complicated. Treasury must pay. SARS must add it to the collection calculations. So Ben is of the opinion that just increase the taxes if you want to. Muzi says, Aish, I apparently owe around 2,000 rand and they refuse to accept my 50% negotiated settlement. So this is a person who's willing to meet the SABC halfway and they're saying, no, no, no. Nzima, our last tweet for now, says, Asina Mali, those who watch SABC channels should pay. Last time I watched TV or SABC channels was in 2010 during that momentous Soccer World Cup. At the moment, I am owing them 3,500 rand and I am not planning on paying. The problem with the SABC is that it has to be funded. The problem with the people who have tweeted is that the appetite to pay doesn't seem to be very high. Tabil, kwenziwa njani manje?
Yeah, I'm just here listening to the comments and all of that. I think this is actually a very important point that you just raised in terms of revenue collections and all of that. So what I think is important right now is that it's important for the SABC to be funded in order to be able to fulfill its duty. So I would urge that people start paying for their TV licenses. But what is the question is, well, how is the management of funds going to be, as we have known that the SABC has issues in terms of mismanagement of funds? For example, the Auditor General 2018-2019 report have actually used 5.6 billion in regular expenditure. So such issues are concerning. As much as people are losing comfort, confidence in the SABC, so they also. We also need to question the issues of how will they address the history of financial mismanagement that is actually there in the SABC. We cannot run away from that. It is a fact. And we need to address such issues because we are currently losing confidence in the governance and the financial management of how the SABC works. So I think that is very important.
Zakele, I mean, the question of how the SABC ought to be funded is clearly a contentious one from the views of listeners. There isn't this universal buy-in into saying, yes, let's fund the SABC this way or another way. If you're sitting here as a lawmaker listening to some of these insights and to some of these comments, what in the view of the DA is the way to go in relation to funding the SABC?
I think the step and the issue before the funding model is really this question of the rationalization of the SABC to get it to a point of being a more sustainable and resource efficient going concern. You know, there's this principle called the 80-20 analysis, or the Pareto principle, which is the idea that in for any person or any enterprise or, you know, any kind of endeavor, roughly 20% of inputs and efforts yield 80% of desired outputs and results. And I think the issue of resource misallocation within the SABC is the first step to check how can they better use the revenue and the assets they currently have and to mold into a shape that is more sustainable for the future. Because that'll then start to answer the questions around the funding model. If the quality of content that goes out is improved, if meeting the needs and resonating with their audiences improves, then they can build that trust, and then people might be more willing to pay the household levy. I think a key thing about this levy proposal, which is a bit of a nuanced one, I must say, because there is precedence for it in terms of the models in Germany and Sweden, for example, and the fact that, you know, most people are likely to access some SABC content on one of its platforms from time to time. So it's about getting to the point where people feel there is a fair value exchange by paying this levy, in the sense that it must substitute for TV licenses. It shouldn't be an extra tax or an extra levy. It must substitute for it. And given that it'll be spread over a broader base of the country, it should nominally then actually be a lower amount. So there are ways to get to a point where it becomes a win-win situation, but it does start with that SABC reform and rationalization. So it becomes a public institution and public broadcaster people are willing to give their money towards.
I'm a bit concerned about this idea of willingness, because, hey, I've got a very, very clear exhibit of what happens when we depend on the willingness and the benevolence of users. It's called e-tolls. People aren't going to unilaterally vote to say, okay, we're going to pay. And I think e-tolls is a good example, because no one can dispute that the roads are in a much better condition. But of course, if you're then going to say, well, here it is, now let's depend on the willingness, it's people's money. And people are always going to say, I may be willing, but hey, let me go out and have a burger instead of paying this amount of money. So can we actually rely on this idea that people are going to say, wow, this is good, let me go and pay, in the absence of a way of saying, actually, it's the law, you don't really have an option out of it?
Well, I think part of that is about how what the mechanism for collection is. So in other words, how it's designed. I don't know what the technicalities are of the proposal yet, but, you know, as a small example, if it is a household levy and you consider that local governments generally have detailed information about houses and you know, people living there, if it is a charge that's included, for example, in your rates bill, and then that gets channeled to the SABC, then it should be automatic and doesn't rely on willingness, but it shouldn't be done in a coercive way where the revenue is still ending up in a bottomless pit of inefficiency and mismanagement.
William, TV licenses are actually currently a law. We are all supposed to pay them, and the SABC is entitled to collect them. And yet here we are, no one pays. You saw what some of our listeners are saying, that not only are they not paying, they have no interest in paying. So even in spite of the fact that the law exists, people are just undoing it. What's going to be different now?
So I think that a lot of it comes down to that issue of trust to begin with. You know, it's very hard to earn, and it's very easy to lose and give away. And we've seen over the last, you know, certainly in our country's democratic history, the SABC has not entrenched itself, broadly speaking, as much as it should have to the people of South Africa. You know, they've squandered the great value that they had when we became a democracy, and they've routinely operated that organization as as a component of state capture. And if you look at that, right, it's no different to any other core critical institution, that in the project of state capture, they put people in, they deliberately undermined its ability to function, they kept it operating in a state of crisis, and that impact is being felt across all departments, across all of these areas. So people are naturally and understandably very angry and extremely reticent about any idea that they should be paying any other kind of tax, because all we see every day on our news and whenever we hear these things is about more and more levels of corruption being exposed in the way that our public funds are being used and abused and thrown away, right? So with that as a point of departure, that's not just about the SABC. That's about a broader level of distrust that people have in the state. And that's a crisis for our government and our democratic government. You know, they really have to address that. Our politicians have to address that. Parliament has to address the way that they deal with these things. They were asleep at the wheel for most of the years when SABC was there actively endorsing and permitting the atrocious behavior. So what we have seen is SABC doing what it should be doing, producing quality news, making sure that they start to rebuild that trust. We're now at the point where this whole idea comes from, let's remind people, is that this is part of a white policy process. We haven't had a new media policy for over two decades. Now, just about everything has changed completely. I mean, you think about 20 years ago and what the internet was like and what everything was like in relation to broadcasting and now. So, of course, we are going to be looking at significant changes and ideas that are being put forward, and this is but one of those ideas. It's also in the broader context where media are no longer this thing where, you know, there's this public broadcast and then there's private and then there's, you know, community, where it's so clearly delineated. Media, we know, are now seen, and journalism particularly, as a public good, as something that's as critical to having a democratic state as having a police, a justice system, a parliamentary system, for example. It's one of those core components. The question then becomes, how do you sustain that when all of those business models are generally falling apart, right? As we move towards digital, what we'll see is Facebook and Google, as they've done the world over, will take most of that advertising. So it's not like you can assume that, okay, if SABC could just fix their business model, that'd be fine. You know, yes, there's certainly ways that they need to be making that far more efficient, et cetera, but we need to find a new way of sustaining the SABC. So whether or not you or I are lucky enough to have access to 25,000 other news channels because we've got access to the internet or not, and that we don't then consume SABC all the time, the reality is I want to live in a democracy, and that part of that price of living in a democracy is paying a small amount in order to ensure that we have a public broadcaster, that when there's a problem and I want to know what's going on, I'm going to be going to credible news sources in order to understand what's happening in my world. And that's where you need those things to be coming up. And when I want children's programming on content that reflects what it's like to be South African, that isn't that. You're not going to get that unless you're going to a public broadcaster.
Yeah. You're not going to get it from the BBC or CNBC or anything like that. Yeah, those are important views, William. We'd like to take some callers now. We're going to start in Centurion. Good evening, Patrick.
Good evening, Kaya, and your guest.
Yebo.
I wanted to ask regarding the analog signal. I once read somewhere that there was once a department within the SABC that provided the analog signal, and then it was sold off. Now it is outsourced, and it's costing the SABC like billions each and every year. I wanted to find out exactly why was it sold off, and then when is the anticipated move to digital from analog, since it's costing us a lot of money?
Okay, thank you for that question, Patrick. I do not know the answer, but I suspect that the SABC is not in a position to pay for anything that costs us billions, but I'm hoping that my guest will be able to answer that. Owen in Midrand.
Good evening. I just like to say that I'm glad that you're having this conversation about funding the SABC. And I also want the South Africans to also understand that the nature of a broadcaster is to be unprofitable. There's no profitable broadcaster, any only state broadcaster in the world. And so the idea is that we need to fund the mandate of the SABC. Now, whether people want to cry and say, no, we don't want Netflix to collect money, or whether we do not want the levy to be added. These are things that are very important, and especially in light of what private media has been doing with ENCA and folks, it's quite clear that we need a state broadcaster in terms of a way to allow for boycott of, say, for example, journalists that are conducting racist interviews. So I do think that we need to then eliminate this question of profitability and accept that this industry in its nature is unprofitable, and we need to support it just like the art.
Would you be more comfortable, Owen, with the term sustainability rather than profitability? Because I think sometimes when you say profitability, people assume that, ha, you're going to overcharge me so you can make a profit. But perhaps sustainability is more reflective of the fact that we just need to be able to keep it going.
No, but sustainable is, what's sustainable to you and sustainable to me is a different thing. I think what is clear is that SABC needs a sustainable and dependable revenue, which they're not getting because of the lack of compliance from many South Africans. And they obviously have their hands tied because they're not about to go and arrest or go knock door to door and say, hey, you see you have a TV there, where's the TV license, and starting to arrest people, which they have the legal rights to do so. So I'm saying, look, guys, let's all play ball instead of this thing of, you know, crying about it. Let's just pay. Because I do think that it will improve the quality of South African journalism, South African media. I mean, we've seen the reviews of the Love Island, South Africa, where the quality of the production has been called into question and it's turning a bad light across, you know, South African media and production. So I do think that if you want proper things to work, you need to fund them properly.
All right. Those are very important views from Owen in Midrand. We are now going over to the capital city, Mpo. Good evening.
Good evening, sir. And how are you, my brother?
All good.
Two things that I want to raise. I think the qualification of the guest, it is to it's almost like he's blaming the democratic government for failure. And I would argue that I think the apartheid government was worse. But that's not the issue. The issue for me is that why can't SABC superimpose their taxes or payments on the multi-choice? Because it is... People pay multi-choice, but if you don't pay, they cut you off. So if you have to access any other television station as a primary broadcaster for the country,
yeah,
they must say you can't have access to others without paying us.
Okay.
And create that buffer, and yeah, you must pay. Yeah.
So are you saying, Paul, that they should say you can't even watch your DSTV if you haven't paid for the SABC?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly the point.
A very interesting point. William, I suspect that this is close to what the SABC has actually put on the table, because I do believe that in their proposals, they have mooted this idea of MultiChoice serving as a collection agency. Of course, MultiChoice has simply said no.
Yeah, and in fact, it's a position that we, as MMA and SOS, Support Public Broadcasting Coalition, supported as well, actually. The idea that MultiChoice has an incredibly efficient system for collecting their subscription fees. What we would like to see would be that they would add this public television or public service or public content levy, whatever you want to call it, onto that, and that people would MultiChoice would collect it on SABC's behalf. Now, the reason I like that idea more than the idea of a general tax. So a general tax is useful, but the problem with that is that then just goes into the general fiscus, and getting that kind of then carefully carved out just for the public broadcast is incredibly hard to do. It'll also take us at least another 7 to 10 years to get that that process to happen. Getting this done now in the next year or two is not an unrealistic option if there's enough political will to actually make it happen, just because the SABC is in deep financial crisis, and this is one of the ways that we can start to make sure that there is a far more sustainable method of seeing it operate. It certainly seems a viable idea, and of course you need to say, well, what those families that are on receiving child support grants and living off the basic income grant, you might want to say, well, they should be excluded from being asked to pay that, because what might be a little bit of money to us over a year would be a lot of money to them, and you don't want to make sure that inequality is perpetuated. You also want to make sure that our government at the same time is providing greater access to the internet so that, you know, you can make that transition to digital. So all of those things need to be occurring at the same time. To expect all of this to be on the shoulders of the SABC is not really fair.
Thabile, your organization was founded specifically to deal with this issue of a government coming up with the payment model that other people said, hey, wait a minute, efficiencies, effectiveness just doesn't exist. What is Outer's view relating to this proposed household levy? Is it the way to go, or is it perhaps another iteration of ETOLs yet again in another form?
Thank you for the question. In Outer's view, we believe that currently, when you look at the SABC and their civil license billing system, it's not working. So how are they going to be able to collect the household levy while the civil billing license is not working? So it's the feasibility of actually collecting this levy that is actually concerning us. We can, for an example, we can look at the IEC for an example, and we have seen that they actually have incomplete addresses of people on their voter rolls, especially with now that it's going to be 2021 local government election. So how can the SABC be able to achieve this, yet it took a long time for the IEC to actually obtain information about households that will actually help them with the voting processes? So how will they be able to trace and collect payments? It's a very interesting question that we actually have. And also, we looked into the SASSA grants offices, which might have actually complete list of household addresses. However, we cannot expect people that are receiving grants from SASSA to actually pay for this levy. So are they exempted, and what is the threshold of income that's going to receive rebates on actually paying for these household levies? And also, how just a last thing to add on is, how does the SABC actually propose that it's going to collect an annual fee from every household, which implies that they're going to be identifying, they're going to be contacting and collecting annually? And when this is something consensus can't do in the process of 6 years when they're collecting data. So how are they going to be able to do it in a year?
Yeah, okay. No, thank you very much for that, Thabile. Zakhele, I mean, you are going to be part of the process that turns this into law or not. So I'm hoping that from what the listeners have been saying on Twitter and from the insight we've shared here, you are able to take some of these insights and say, hey guys, this is what the public appetite is. Unfortunately, I am out of time, Mr. Mbeni. But yeah, next time we will sort of give you more time to sort of put your views across. Power listeners, it's been a conversation around the SABC. It's now time for Power News. Thank you to my three guests.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.